We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
And good morning and welcome to the second hour of Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In this part of Focus, we'll be talking about colorectal cancer. Now, maybe not the most pleasant thing to be talking about, and certainly we know that there are a lot of people who end up with colon cancer. I think more than 100,000 people last year. Got that diagnosis. There is, however, a good news side of this, and that is that because of increased awareness and improved screening and treatment, over the last couple of decades, the number of people who die from colon cancer has gone down very significantly. So what we want to try to do this morning is talk a little bit about what this is, what we know about how and why it develops, what are some of the risk factors, and then certainly also review some of the recommendations for screening for everybody. And our guest for the program is Dr. Gary Griglione. He is a gastroenterologist at Carl in Urbana, and he specializes in this part of the body, and we're glad to have him here and to talk. And we are opening things up to questions, just like we do frequently with physicians on the program. I do like to caution people at the beginning, when we have a doctor on the show, that we cannot diagnose over the telephone. There are limits as to what we can do, but we do these shows because we think it should add to your information about health, and it's a good place to talk about basics and answer basic questions. And I'm sure that the doctor would do his best to try to answer whatever questions people would have. So the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and you may email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's do some numbers here at the beginning. How does colon cancer stack up? How does it rank with other cancers?
It's horrible. It is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the United States, just behind lung cancer, which has a great lead right now, unfortunately. So it's being the second leading cause of cancer deaths, we are on a mission. And if there's one thing that I could hopefully leave with our audience, and I try to impress upon each and every patient that comes in to see us, is that colon cancer is preventable. By that, I mean if you do the proper screening for colon cancer, you can prevent colon cancer, period. That's the message. The problem is the message isn't being heard. It's not being acted upon. As far as people getting their screenings done when they should get their screenings done for colon cancer, like you said, there are over 100,000 cases in 2009 and about 60,000 deaths, which is about a third of our combined cities. So to put that in perspective, imagine a third of Champaign-Urbana being gone. So trying to draw some real-life analogies to give people a better perception, I try to do that every day, and it hits home much better.
Yeah. It seems to me that it's something where there is more awareness. There has been an effort, I think, to promote awareness and to tell people about the importance of screening, though. Are you saying that in spite of that, people are still not having the recommended tests?
Absolutely, for various reasons. I'll take you back on a historical trail. The stigma associated with the, quote, proctologist, unquote, in the past has left us new age gastroenterologists with still somewhat of a fog on our windshields as far as our reputation. But President Reagan sort of wiped some of that fog off. He developed colon cancer, or was found to have colon cancer, and was found because he had presented with some blood in his stool and anemia, and had a colonoscopy back in the early 80s, I believe it was. And that really sent a newsflash through the gastroenterology world and the health world that there was a test that could detect colon cancer, sort of has gone from there into there is a test or tests that can actually prevent colon cancer, which is where the money's at. Obviously, you want to prevent the disease. So thanks to Ronald Reagan, our next celebrity that really brought this into a spotlight nationally, internationally, was Katie Couric, whose husband unfortunately died, I believe he was around 40, of colorectal cancer. And she put her derriere on morning television one day on whatever program she was on, Good Morning America or whatever it is, and had a colonoscopy live. I actually watched it. We watched it at work. It was fantastic. So she and Ronald Reagan really brought the awareness of colon cancer to a peak. You know, since the those two people, obviously, we've revved up our campaign, our awareness through our Colon Cancer Awareness Month, which is every March. We go out into the public and give talks and try to go on to news programs. The National Cancer Society, all of the groups are really revved up, just like there's a Breast Cancer Awareness Month and Cardiac Disease Month. That's our month to really wave our flag.
Yeah. We have a caller here. I'll tell you what, we'll get right to them and other folks who have questions. You're certainly welcome to call and talk with our guest, Dr. Gary Griglione. He's a gastroenterologist at Carl in Urbana. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have someone to start with in Urbana, line one, right here. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I've heard that there's an age beyond which you don't normally give colonoscopies. What is it, 75 or something like that? And is that true? What is the age and why is it not given beyond that?
That is untrue. There are no formal guidelines about when to stop doing colonoscopies in people according to their age. Our OB gynecology friends have come out with a guideline to stop doing pap smears to prevent cervical cancer in women over the age of 70 or 72. However, in gastroenterology, colorectal surgery worlds, there is no age cutoff. And the reason is everyone's living longer. People are productive. People are active in their 80s, some in their 90s. And if they're healthy and they have a risk for colon cancer, we still are doing colonoscopies and screening them for colon cancer. That being said, you do have to take into consideration the risk-benefit ratio. For instance, if you have a fairly frail but still getting around 85-year-old person that has had colon polyps and is at risk for colon cancer, you have to weigh the risk of a colonoscopy versus the risk that they will develop colon cancer and colon cancer take their life. Now, knowing that a small little growth of tissue called a polyp, which is the embryonic form of colon cancer, that's how cancer starts, may take 15 or 20 years to develop into a malignant cancer in their colon, do the math, 85 plus 15 or 20, you'd have a 105 or 110-year-old person at that point, maybe have colon cancer at that age. We don't see a lot of 105 and 110-year-olds at this point. God knows in the future we probably will. But you have to weigh the risk of that 85-year-old dying of colon cancer at 110 versus having a complication of a colonoscopy procedure when they're doing well at 85. So those are the mechanics.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Right, thank you. Well, other questions, welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. I want to make sure we talk some more about screening, but let's take a step or two back here. And let me ask you first about risk factors for colon cancer. I'm sure that the first one, number one on the list, would be someone in your family that had it. But in addition to that, what are some of the other things you look for?
You know, we don't have a real hard amount of science on the actual risk factors for developing colon cancers. There are maybe some loose associations that can be drawn, for instance, diet, although, again, it's very loose. The old eat a high-fiber diet and take a lot of fresh vegetables uncooked with high in antioxidants will prevent your colon cancer is not borne out in science. There may be a very loose and small association, but it's not real firm. So as much as everybody wants to believe eating the right things and eating a healthy diet is going to prevent you from getting colon cancer, it's not true. That being said, you should eat a high-fiber diet to keep your bowels regular and have a very happy colon and hope that that does influence whether you develop polyps or colon cancer. The number one risk factor is genetics. That's where the money's at. That's where all science is going for almost any disease you can think of these days. We're really at the tip of the iceberg with genetics and medicine. So if you have a family member, a first-degree relative, meaning a parent or sibling that had colon cancer or colon polyps, then you're at risk. You're in a higher risk age group. And you would be screened for colon polyps and colon cancer more frequently than if you didn't have a first-degree relative with polyps or colon cancer. That's really the 99% of the game is genetics.
Yeah. So what you're doing with your screening is that what you're looking for is this precancerous condition, this
exactly.
thing called the polyp.
Right.
So what is that exactly?
You know, cancer begins as one cell that's decided to escape the normal checks and balances of the human body to keep it from going crazy and dividing into two and then into four and then exponentially dividing out of control. That's what cancer is. It's a cell gone wild. So whatever the trigger for that cell is, when we have identified that trigger, then we'll have a Nobel Prize winner because he or she will know the cause for cancer. In any case, a single cell that lines the colon starts to divide, is triggered by whatever, and continues to divide until there's a lump of cells called a polyp, which we see visibly during an exam as a little tiny growth like a skin tag you'd see on your skin or a mole on your skin. It's a growth of tissue. That is the precursor to cancer. As I mentioned before, the transformation of that polyp maturing into a cancerous growth. It may be 15, 20 years, maybe longer. There are occasions where we believe it's shorter, but generally it's quite a long time. And it's based on that time how often we suggest screening exams. The person that's in an average risk group with no family members, we suggest after age 50 every 10 years, mm-hmm. knowing that you know, the risk for a cancer to develop may be 15 or 20 years. 10 years is a reasonable guess. If you have a family member with colon polyps or colon cancer, we suggest every 5 years as opposed to every 10 years after the age of 50.
And now there is also a test, an easy, non-invasive test that you recommend. I'm sure that people after, and probably again, it's probably after age 50, that people do every year. This is this test to see if there is any blood in the stool. And you can pick up very small amounts of blood that you would never see if you just looked.
Exactly.
And this is, and so the thing is that these polyps do give off a little bit of blood.
Presumably, they are traumatized by fecal material as fecal material rubs by a polyp that has sort of a friable, fragile surface, and there will be a microscopic blood that is released. It's called fecal occult blood, which means you can't see it to the naked eye. It's a test that we've done since the 1940s, in fact, and was the standard of care for screening for colon cancer and colon polyps. It was combined eventually with a shortened version of a colonoscopy, which is the test now we do. The old test was, originally, it was a rigid proctoscope, so therefore the proctologist was named. And then once flexible scopes were developed, the new test was called a flexible sigmoidoscopy, which sees about a third of the colon. So combining the fecal occult blood tests with the flexible sigmoidoscopy used to be the screening method, and it made a dent in colon cancer rates. Unfortunately, we would not see, the proximal part of the colon, upper two-thirds of the colon, so you'd have to rely on the fecal occult blood test to be detecting polyps in the far reaches of the colon, whereas the flexible sigmoidoscope only saw the lower third. Now, with colonoscopy and a test called CT colonography, the so-called virtual colonoscopy, which, by the way, President Obama just had his screening done for a 50-year-old. He chose the CT virtual method. With those methods, the fecal occult blood tests and flexible sigmoidoscopy are really antiquated and not done very often.
Huh. Now, I think, though, that some people have said, well, the advantage that you have if you're doing a colonoscopy, the mechanical colonoscopy, is that you're in there, and if you see something, you can take care of it.
Exactly.
If you do it on the virtual, then you're going to that person's going to have to come back probably and go through the prep, which is not all that pleasant again, and go through the whole thing again so that you can actually go in there, maybe again do a visual inspection, and then if there's something that you want to remove, well, you're there and you can do that.
Right. So a colonoscopy and a CT colonography or virtual colonoscopy are trying to detect these polyps. The preparation for the two exams is exactly the same. The ideal world would be do a CT colonography, a virtual colonoscopy. If you find a polyp, the patient's already prepped, just whisk them over to another room and have a gastroenterologist handy to do their colonoscopy. Well, the real world doesn't quite work that way. You'd have to have people standing by to do colonoscopies at a whip stitch. That's just not practical. In some academic centers, they are able to accomplish that if they have staffing. But by and large, it does end up being two separate preps for a person. If they have the virtual colonoscopy or colonography and a polyp's found, they will end up having to drink again to have a colonoscopy.
Yeah.
So the president, by the way, really caused quite a stir when he had his screening done as a virtual colonoscopy. It's not been approved for by the federal government to be reimbursed by Medicare. And a lot of patients, obviously, are Medicare age that are being screened for colon cancer. So the message from Congress is that we don't think that it's up to snuff and therefore aren't going to pay for it, Medicare at least, patients. But President Obama, I guess, footed the bill out of his pocket, maybe. I don't know.
Mm. All right. Well, we have a caller here. Let's get to them. And this is someone here in Champaign. This is line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Okay, so I fall in that genetic pool there. And I'm 43, relatively healthy. Should I start screening before age 50? And if so, is that just with the start with that, the fecal test and then go from there? Or should I just go for the whole thing, given both my parents have been, my father had colon cancer, and luckily at an early stage and was able to cut it all out. And my mother has a history of polyps.
So the guidelines would suggest that if your first-degree relative had colon cancer or colon polyps at a young age, now there comes the hard part, define young. For now, the general age of 55 to 60 as a range is felt to be the cutoff. So if your parents or sibling had colon cancer or colon polyps at 55 to 60 or younger, you're at an even higher risk, and you would be suggested that it would be best to screen about 15 years less than the age of the relative that you had that had the colon polyps or colon cancer.
Okay.
So if your father had colon polyps or cancer at 55, you would screen all of his children at 40.
Okay, so it depends on, so that's where we start to get the numbers. Okay.
Right.
So that makes sense.
Good question.
But otherwise, 50 is the accepted.
50 right. is accepted. Right.
Okay, well, thanks.
All right. Well, thank you. Again, other questions, welcome. 333-9455, a toll-free 800-222-9455. I want to have you talk a little bit more about what your feelings are about the full colonoscopy as compared with the flexible sigmoid, where you're not looking at as much territory there. Mm-hmm. My own experience, for example, you know, I turn 50, doctor says, okay, now's the time to do this. Mm-hmm. Now, here you go. Here's your choices. And he said, you know, you do the one, you do the other. The only difference is that if you have a colonoscopy, you can go 10 years, at least at the time, I'm pretty sure this is what he said, you can go 10 years between tests. You do the flexible sigmoid, you got to come back in 5 years. And I said, okay, give me the flexible sigmoid, we'll see in 5 years. And so now I've been through that twice. But I guess I'm wondering about, well, is there some good reason, you know, what do gastro people say about those two tests? And is there some reason really to say, well, we think it might be actually a good idea. Let's look at more territory. Let's do the full thing as opposed to just doing the flexible sigmoid.
Well, just intuitively, anybody can imagine that having a colonoscope pass through your entire 5 or 6 feet of your colon to see every square millimeter is going to be more effective in seeing polyps as opposed to the short flexible sigmoidoscopy combined with the fecal occult blood test. So, again, intuitively, just logically, it sounds right. The golden nugget, however, lies in statistics, and the statistics are that for all of the years we were doing flexible sigmoidoscopy and fecal occult blood testing as our screening for colon cancer, we made a dent in colon cancer rates and colon cancer deaths since the colonoscopy has taken off and the advent of colonoscopy. That's where we've seen the dramatic decrease in colon cancer rates. So it's really bought itself a firm place with hard science and statistics showing that there's a benefit of doing the entire exam, a colonoscopic right. exam.
Now, is it not true, though, that most polyps occur in that bottom part, the part that you're going to see with the flexible sigmoid?
You've really been reading. What a great question. The 50s and 60s, it seemed that colon cancer tended to be a left-sided disease, which was usually within the reach of a flexible sigmoidoscope. Mm-hmm. However, in the past 2 to 3 decades, we're seeing colon cancer rates much more commonly in the right side of the colon, which is the very first few inches of the colon, which is not within the reach of the flexible sigmoidoscope. Mm-hmm. So why that is, no one knows. There's obviously some shift, evolutionary or some adaptive shift going on. So the colonoscopy is even more important these days than it was back 30 or 40 years ago to reach that first few inches of the colon.
Yeah.
Let me just say the reason, going back to your question about why we haven't been successful in screening everyone. At this point, of the 50-year-old crowd, we've reached about 45%. Some say maybe 50%, meaning about half of the people that should be screened have been screened. What are the reasons? Probably the major reason that we hear when people finally succumb and come in and get screened is the preparation.
Yeah.
People have heard horror stories about the preparation this, the preparation that. It almost killed me. The preparation in the past, I don't think killed anybody, but it was not very pleasant. When I was first starting out in the late 70s, we would admit people to the hospital on a Sunday night and put them on liquids for 3 days, give them round-the-clock magnesia and enemas. By Wednesday, they were ready for their colonoscopy. It was an ordeal. Then some smart people developed a non-absorbable electrolyte solution that you drink and in essence flushes through your bowel, cleanses your colon with no leaching out of electrolytes from your body. It doesn't, nothing gets absorbed into your body. You don't become over waterlogged with fluid. It's sort of like Drano, I tell people. And initially in the early and mid-80s, we had people drinking 2-gallon jugs of this solution, which I don't think anybody really finished, and it was horrible. So fast forward to 2010, we now have people drinking 64 ounces. That's 5 cans of beer, 5 cans of Coke, 3 bottles of Gatorade, a couple of large-sized McDonald's lemonades. It's not that much volume. Mixed with a laxative called Miralax. It's a colorless, odorless, tasteless powder that you mix into the liquid. It may thicken up your beer or Coke or whatever you drink your Miralax in, but it doesn't alter the taste. So that has really helped us in convincing people to have their colonoscopy. It's gotten a lot of people over the barrier of the PrEP. In fact, we're always trying to improve, and we're working on a 32 or 40 ounce PrEP now. So we'll see if that's as effective and safe. There have been some bad PrEPs that have been harmful that have been taken off the market as recently as a couple of years ago. And one was called Fleet's Phosphate Soda. It was sodium phosphate, a little 90 milliliter bottle that you would drink. And turns out it did cause some kidney failure in people that ended up on hemodialysis for kidney failure. So that's gone. So these lavage PrEPs, we call them, are the best. They're safe and very effective. That's the major barrier.
We're at the midpoint here in this part of Focus, and our guest is Dr. Gary Griglione. He's a gastroenterologist at Carl in Urbana. We're talking about colon cancer, and questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, in terms of treatment, if you do the colonoscopy, you get in there and you see polyps, then you physically remove them. Right?
Right. When we find a little polyp, typically there's the size of a pea, maybe 2 peas side by side. So they're very soft and usually red in color and easy to recognize. What we do is grasp them with a small forceps, almost like tweezers, and the forceps is hooked up to an electrical unit to shoot electricity through it, and we burn it. We cauterize it, we call it fulgurate, and save a piece for a biopsy. Obviously, the polyps can vary in size. Some that are bigger we will snip off with a little different device, but we remove the polyp mm-hmm. right then.
And so then you test that, and if it turns out to be benign, then you're done?
You're done. There are two types of polyp. Polyps that are bad actors that turn into cancer, they're called adenomas or glandular type of polyps. And then there are polyps that don't turn into cancer, they're called hyperplastic polyps. They're in essence a skin tag. Mm-hmm. And if you have the precancerous adenomatous type of polyps, then you're in a high risk group and you're checked every 5 years the rest of your life. The hyperplastic, which are not precancers, you can remain in every 10-year checkup.
So even if you have one of these that would become cancerous, if it was left in place, once you have physically removed it, then no further treatment is necessary.
Right. That polyp is obliterated. It's gone. It's a done deal. Now, the fact that you had one, a precancerous polyp, increases your risk of having more over the course of your lifetime, naturally. That's why we would want to check you every 5 years going forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's good. So this shows you the benefit of the screening process. And if we did that and if everybody did it was recommended, then you saw a problem, you'd get rid of it. And
theoretically, we would wipe out colon cancer just like polio with a polio vaccine.
Mm-hmm. So we have a caller here in Terre Haute. Let's talk with them. Line 4. Hello? Yes. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I have had 3 colonoscopies, and there was polyps each time. One was 3, the second was 5, and the last one they gave me about 2 years ago was 7, and I asked them about them polyps that they removed, and I said, what would it be if they hadn't removed them? They said it would turn into cancer. And I've had some irregularities And I called them. It's been 2 years. And there's a lot of cancer in my family. I don't know how many was colon cancer, but anyhow, what should I do in that kind of situation? I'm now 68. There was a test they gave me, kind of described it, in the earlier years, and it was one of those terrible situations. But the last three that I had, it wouldn't bother me to go in tomorrow to have it done. And I just wonder what I'm supposed to do. I called them about an irregularity, and they said, well, you're due in such and such time. And so what are you going to go from there?
Well, I guess I'd want to clarify what you mean by irregularity, and are you talking about a symptom that you've developed, if that's what you're talking about?
You know, the hurting in my side, a narrowing of your bowel movement, and diarrhea, and then it quits, and then you have problems starting, and then when you get started moving your bowels, and all of a sudden it breaks loose back into a diarrhea. So,
my best suggestion to you would be making an appointment to sit down with your doctor to discuss the symptoms. I would doubt that you have those symptoms are suggestive of colon cancer. However, if you've had polyps multiple times before, you're in a higher risk for colon cancer. So I wouldn't just call. I would call and get an appointment, and your doctor, I'm sure, can sort out the details of the symptoms. Maybe it's time for you to do another colonoscopy now, based on just the symptoms.
It's getting pretty close to that time. I've waited about 8 or 9 months, but I've tried to keep a pretty close watch on them. And I've got a daughter-in-law that actually works in that area with a doctor here in Terre Haute area, which is excellent. And mm-hmm. like I said, it's not because I'm fearing a test or anything like that.
That's good to hear.
It wouldn't bother me to go see you tomorrow. It wouldn't.
I wish everybody felt that way.
Well, I'm telling you, there's a doctor here that, you know. Now the first one that I had, no, but this guy's done the last three, but the thing is, what I don't like about it is the polyps that I have, and they've increased each time, and so I'd like to. And it seems like if you go far enough into the colon, there's a little flap that on the other side, a lot of times, there's something there that they miss because they don't go far enough.
I don't think that's right. If he does your doctor does a complete exam, he's going to see every square inch. But my best suggestion would be sitting down with your doctor. You have a constellation of symptoms that aren't typical for colon cancer or colon polyps. Maybe something else is going on. You should be checked.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
I appreciate talking to you.
You're welcome. Very good. And that we talked a little bit earlier about symptoms or maybe lack of symptoms. That one of the things, for example, that you test for the sort of easy screening that you can have everybody do to test to see if you have these very small amounts of blood in the stool, things that you're not going to see. So there's from time to time, people are going to have symptoms. They may have constipation. They may have diarrhea. They may have cramps. They may, all kinds of stuff, which may not certainly have anything to do with whether or not you have cancer.
Right.
Are there any really reliable symptoms that you can point to as something that really could be a symptom of cancer?
Absolutely. You can, and that's the unfortunate news. By the time you have some symptoms, whether it is a change in your bowel habits, pain, bloating, obviously blood in your stool, oftentimes if it's cancer, it's already out of the barn. It's an advanced mm-hmm. malignancy. To start showing symptoms like that means it's usually a fairly large cancer that's probably been there quite a while and may have already spread. So We don't wait for symptoms, because if there are symptoms, then that person's in trouble. So we're on the prevention side. I can't emphasize enough the beauty of the colonoscopy or virtual colonography or some of these other screening methods in preventing colon cancer. There's really two cancers we have a crack at preventing: colon cancer and cervical cancer in women by doing pap smears. All the other cancers, we have wonderful technology and methods to detect cancer: MRI scans, CT scans, mammograms, x-rays, etc. The problem is when you see a spot, a lump, a bump, whatever, you already have a cancer. You haven't prevented it. You've detected it. You're now seeing a cancer doctor. So cervix and colon cancer, we can be ahead of that, and prevention is the key word.
Right. Another caller here in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I had a question regarding enemas. Is there any evidence out there that or statistics that have shown that regular treatments of enemas have a preventative effect for colon cancer?
There is no science to substantiate that enemas have any benefit in preventing the growth of polyps and therefore colon cancer.
Okay.
The whole theory behind the enemas, obviously, or cleansing enemas, we hear, or even taking laxatives to really keep your colon cleansed, is the concept that there are carcinogens in our stool, that the longer these carcinogens or cancer-causing substances in our stool, the longer they're in contact with the lining of your colon, the more likely you're going to get cancer. It's hoo-ha. That is not substantiated in science.
Okay.
All right.
But you wouldn't recommend that as a...
Definitely would not. In fact, sometimes we see as patients that have been to centers that use enema therapy, oftentimes they will come in a mess. Their colon, the normal bacterial flora in their colon is gone. It's disrupted from the enema therapy, and then it's a whole nother issue.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. I have here an email that has come in from a listener. It has a bowel-related question, not on cancer, but on bowel movements and what is or is not normal. And the listener says she has a 14-year-old, has extremely large bowel movements, sometimes 2 inches in diameter, 18 inches long. And this is a girl, and she says that she has a very slight build, and mom wants to know, is this something to be worried about?
I don't think so. So far as I know, there's not an 11th commandment about thou shalt have a bowel movement at a certain size or shape at any frequency in our day. People have bowel movements up to 3 to 5 times a day. That's normal for them. Some people go and have a bowel movement once a week or every 8 days, and that's normal for them. What's important is what feels okay. If that child felt poorly, was bloated all the time, had trouble with the act of defecating, maybe had bleeding with larger bowel movements, then that's something that should be paid attention to. But the size and frequency of bowel habits, that is not set in stone.
Yeah, well, that's something that I was actually thinking about asking, because I'm sure if we started actually to ask people and we could get people to talk about it, you'd find out that there is a great variability from one person and the next. So I'm sure that what that means is, if I asked you, what is a normal pattern, you would say, well, you really can't say that there is such a thing. You'd have to say, well, what's the pattern been for that person?
Exactly. And then when there is a change, it's noted by the person that has had a bowel movement every 5 days for their entire adult life. Now they're going 5 times a day. That's obviously a change. So it's the change that we pay more attention to.
So that would be, you don't want to necessarily say that, get somebody really worried, but it sounds as if you would say that if you do have a significant change from what's been your pattern for, if you'd say, like, you know, forever it was like this.
Right.
And then last week, it started being like this, and it was a big change. Now, at what point, though, then would you think, well, maybe it might be a good idea for me to talk to my doctor about this?
Most changes in the bowel habit are short-term are due to dietary influences or infections. Sometimes medications that have been changed or a person added or changed a medication. But usually we will see people after a bowel habit has changed for maybe a month. That's probably a trigger to call your doctor and say, something's out of whack here. A month is a little bit beyond what you'd expect for an infection or something simple in the diet to cause that length of a time of a change. Mm-hmm. So it's really a time element. Let me digress 1 second. We're always clamoring to find a screening test that doesn't require drinking a prep and having a tube shoved up your rear end and see a doctor like me. We're on the brink of a lot with genetics. Right now, there is a study, it's headed by Mayo Clinic, regarding fecal blood DNA. So it's the DNA analysis of the blood in the fecal material, even the most microscopic amount of blood, that they run a genetic analysis on that blood. And polyps, precancerous polyps, have a specific genetic makeup. So if you identify that genetic pattern of a precancerous polyp, it will put that person in a higher risk category or a low risk category. And a person with a high risk category, we can say, you should have colonoscopy now, regardless of age. We may in the future be screening our kids when they're 10 and 15 and 20 to identify them according to their genetic makeup. That's really where the exciting research is going.
Yeah. And I guess, though, the bottom line, though, is if you're really going to do a visual inspection of the bowel,
colonoscopy
it's got to be empty. It's got to be empty. It can't be anything in there, so you can make sure that you can have complete visual inspection way around so that you can actually see.
Let me just tout the procedure itself. The exam is a piece of cake. The biggest barrier for people, the 50% of people that haven't had their screening at age 50, is the prep. Once the prep is over with, the exam itself is very safe and comfortable with a light sedative and a light amount of pain medication and narcotic. Typically, it's a 10 to 15 minute exam at the most, and the patient goes home maybe after an hour to an hour and a half stay in our unit. So it's a very simple and safe exam. The complications include a perforation in your colon, particularly if you're snipping off polyps. The national rate is about 0.1%, one in a thousand. In our institution, we brag we're at about 0.01%. So we have a very, very excellent reputation for safety in regards to complication called perforation. The other risk is bleeding. If you snip off a polyp, you can have bleeding. Once again, the rate nationally and our rate is incredibly low, about 1 in 10,000.
Okay. Other calls here. Got about 5 minutes left. Here's someone to talk with in Savoy. We'll go to line number one in Savoy. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I recently had a colonoscopy, and 4 polyps were removed. And it was recommended that I have another in 1 year. I'm curious as to know why such a short interval.
The time frame for a follow-up exam after someone has had polyps depends on a couple of factors. One, what type of polyp, or are they precancerous or not? Two, the size of the polyps. If they were more than a centimeter, that's a higher risk, and we would do a follow-up sooner than 5 years. And three, the number of polyps. Typically, the American Cancer Society guidelines suggest more than 3 polyps is a trigger for a follow-up colonoscopy sooner than 5 years. Now, how much sooner than 5 years is in a gray area. There are some people in professional societies that suggest 3 years. Some people would suggest, and a gentleman like yourself, with 4 polyps, if they were decent size, do another one in a year. Make sure that you clear the colon of any other polyps that may have been overlooked, if they were small ones, hidden behind a fold. So your doctor has likely recommended a one-year follow-up based on that.
Yes, that makes sense. And I'm 80 years old, so...
You're young.
Yeah, yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Over to another caller here. This is Champagne, line two. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I had a couple of questions. I'm scheduled for a colonoscopy Monday on May 10th, and this is my first one. I'll be 53 in June. And I got this bottle of pills, and I'm supposed to prep Sunday night. I didn't take a good look at them, but I was wondering, are you familiar with those? I'm supposed to take like three every 15 minutes, and it's 32 of them.
I am not familiar with the pills that you're taking. We don't use a pill prep at our institution at Carl, so I'm not exactly sure what pills you have there.
Okay, I'm getting it at Provena, and the doctor's, he's the one that gave them to me.
If you have any questions, that might be worth asking the doctor about, if that's the appropriate prep for you to be taking.
Okay, I just had one more question.
Mm-hmm.
I was told I was supposed to get a driver to take me.
Yeah, you need to have a driver at least to bring you home. You can, if you make your way by yourself to the exam, that's okay. However, after the exam, with the sedatives you get, you're basically legally drunk for 24 hours. So we medical legally don't allow patients to drive for 24 hours or operate heavy machinery.
Okay. Well, I was just curious because my sister's up in Chicago. They had theirs, and they drove there and back.
Not a good idea. That'd be like have a six-pack and go out and drive around town.
Oh, okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Now, I suppose if you had a flexible sigmoid,
without sedation,
that would be
you're good to
different.
Go.
That's not a thing. But it's this other. It's a very strange experience. It does something with your memory.
It causes short-term amnesia. About 30 minutes of your existence, you don't remember what was going on. So it's got a very nice short amnestic response.
But and then you just want to make sure that there's no residual stuff going on in the period of those hours afterwards. So that's why you say, yeah, just be careful. Don't drive and, you know, be careful of the other things that
you're
doing.
It's a sleeping pill. It's Valium in a liquid form. So, you know, taking a wad of sedatives and going out and driving or operating machinery or doing something would be unsafe.
All right. Back to another caller, Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that in addition to a polyp being an indicator, that just a raised portion in the lining of the bowel could also be an indication. So I'd like the doctor to discuss that.
What you're talking about are flat lesions that can grow along the surface of the colon, sometimes very difficult to detect. It does take a keen eye to see these lesions. We do have some ways with the colonoscope to detect these beyond just a plain light in your eyes. There's some dyes that we can spray through the scope that accentuate the flat growth. There's also what's called narrow band imaging. By the flick of a button on our scope, we can change the character of the wavelength of the light that we're shining in, and it enhances your ability to see these flat. They're flat polyps is what they are. So with a couple of techniques, we're pretty good at detecting those.
Is the flat polyp causing cancer at the same rate as a more visible polyp?
It really is. The statistics, however, for a flat polyp seem to be a little worse. If you can go along with me here, a polyp that grows from the surface up and is sticking up from the lining of your colon like a mole or skin tag, the so-called depth of that polyp you see because it's on the surface. A flat polyp, oftentimes the depth of it is growing down into the lining of the colon. So there may be a polyp that's growing the wrong direction into the lining of the colon, and it may be pretty big. So you can't see it because it's underneath the surface, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. Since these flat polyps are equally dangerous, it seems like... one would like to know how capable a doctor or a hospital is in detecting them. And is there some way a patient might be able to have such an assessment or get such an assessment?
You're talking about a quality of physician indicator, and to my knowledge, there's no quality indicators of any physicians on their abilities to detect the flat lesions. However, if you look at the detection rate of polyps, that is one quality indicator we keep track of. If a physician is not seeing any polyps, there's something wrong, because at the age of 50, about 25 to 30% of us have these polyps. So if you have a physician who's done 1,000 colonoscopies and has found one polyp in 1,000 people, something's wrong. He's obviously missing the boat. But we don't have a way to gauge how good of a job a colonoscopist is doing at seeing the flat polyps. There is an art to that.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, there, just about the point we have to finish up. Any last sort of thing that you would like to leave with folks?
I guess as I started, the major emphasis is on prevention. If we had a preventative test for women for breast cancer, I think they would be lined up from Times Square to Los Angeles for that test. Well, we don't see that long of a line for colonoscopies, but we have a test that prevents colon cancer. That's the whole word.
All right. Our guest this morning, Dr. Gary Guglione, he's a gastroenterologist at Carle in Urbana. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.